pase, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Thursday, February 27th, 2020. I'm Kevin Larame, and I'm joined by Dwayne Mullins, as always. Joining us today to start the show, Rudy Schuler of the Sporting News, to help us preview the Canadian MLS team. It's MLS preview week, after all, and it's day four, and the regular season is 48 hours away. Rudy, how are you today?
I'm great. It really feels like MLS weather outside, doesn't it, in both our cities here today?
Full disclosure, there's like a big snowstorm that just left Toronto, and then it's on its way to Montreal. So Welcome to the North Pole.
Yeah. Winter, your thoughts on the winter schedule? No, we'll leave that one well enough alone.
Yeah, no, you know my thoughts already.
Anyone who thinks there should be a winter schedule doesn't live in the North. Anyway, Rudy, let's start with eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Let's start out west. Vancouver. I've listened to a lot of previews. There's a pretty consistent thread that no one really believes in the Whitecaps. So I'm going to ask you the opposite. Tell me why we might be able to believe in the Whitecaps this year.
Ooh, okay. Now you put me on the spot there because I was going to go the other way. I do like a lot of what Mark Dos Santos and his staff have done. Obviously, I'm a big fan of Lucas Cavallini. I think he can lead the line among the best of the strikers in MLS. That's not to say he's going to be challenging for the Golden Boot, because I don't know if he's going to have the service. But this is a guy who could put up 15, 20 goals in his first season with Vancouver. And, goals cover up a lot of holes in soccer, as we're all well aware. And if he can score those kind of goals that kind of patch up some of the issues that the Whitecaps have, I think every penny would have been worth what they spent on him. But I do think that what the Whitecaps have done is, look, this is another big rebuild, the second year in a row. I think Mark Dos Santos, and not just him, but the whole club, they realized last year it wasn't working. They kind of threw a bunch of stuff to the wall, saw if it stuck. A lot of it stuck. A lot of it didn't. I think a lot more of it didn't. So, they retained the stuff that did stick, and they got rid of the other stuff, and they brought in some players. It looks like they have an identity that they're trying to build. It's going to be a tough, sturdy team that'll try to nick goals again, like I said, through Cavallini. It's not going to be, the prettiest soccer to watch at times. They're not going to be a possession-heavy team. I just don't think they're built that way. But they're built, I wouldn't say it's a pure counter-attacking team, but they are built to bunker and counter in that kind of style, and maybe play a little bit of a higher press as well, maybe to destabilize teams when they have the ball. So it's a team that's not going to play, if you want to show non-soccer fans a game, you're not going to show them too many Whitecaps games, because I don't think they're going to play the prettiest soccer. But I think they're going to be a lot more effective than they were last year, just because of the continued roster rebuild. I like a lot of the pieces they brought in.
All right. Full disclosure, I don't particularly believe in the Whitecaps either, but I thought we should start somewhat positive before we, sort of delve into the problems there. There was a major shakeup with the Whitecaps last year. A lot happened off the pitch as well as on, and there is a complete different kind of structure there. Do you have confidence that they will stick with MDS and that this is the right approach that they are now on to?
Well, I think bringing in Axel Schuster helps. He's a guy that can bring all the focus on the soccer side and kind of absorb all of that, and just allow Mark Dos Santos to just focus on being a coach, right? A lot of that other off-field stuff that happened last year, maybe it filtered down to Dos Santos as well, because he was a lot more of a mouthpiece for the team than maybe he should have been in his first year as a Major League Soccer coach, his first year as a coach at this level. So now, if someone, reporters or whatever are kind of asking questions about off-field stuff and how they affect the on-field product, it'll go to Schuster first. It won't go to Dos Santos. So I think that's kind of a nice little byproduct of the not just the roster rebuild, but the front office rebuild that they've got done, right? It's now you have more of a focal point and everyone knows exactly what their jobs are, and they have each person has a more of a narrow focus of what they have to achieve. So it's not Marco Santos and his staff worrying about coaching and being a GM and being, you know, kind of the PR department as well. You know, not really the PR department, but these are the people that that kind of speak on behalf of the club. Now you've got Schuster to kind of take that role as well, and then also lend a hand in terms of scouting and all those other things that he is good at. So to me, it's all about the continuing rebuild of the club from top to bottom, not just the roster, which I talked about before, but also the club from top to bottom, in that everyone has more defined role. And I think that will help going forward. I still don't know if this is a playoff team. I think they're on the bubble and they'll be on the bubble all year. But to me, you know, I think their identity is a lot more what they were last year.
Well, there's a start of an identity, which is already already a start, right? So we'll hopefully off the pitch for Vancouver will be a bit less tumultuous in the upcoming season. We hope for the best for everyone in Vancouver. Let's continue our travels and move a bit more east, but we'll stop before we get really to the east of the Canada. Let's talk about Toronto FC. Toronto FC, of course, has a couple of new pieces, a couple of good pieces from their former team that were finalists of MLS Cup last year and third time in the last 4 years. So when you look at TFC in 2020, which is it? The outlier of 2018 or the finalists of the other 3 years?
Well, I don't think they're going to be playing like finalists all year long. You know, the biggest thing over TFC's head is injuries. Of course, Michael Bradley's out for 3 months, 4 months maybe. Pablo Piatti is already out. He hasn't even set foot on the field yet. Josy Altidore is always a good candidate to miss a whole lot of games. Those are three big players, three big names. Two of them are DPs, and Michael Bradley, of course, just came off 6 years of being a DP, functionally a DP, and the captain of the team. So that's, to me, the biggest concern. And how much time these players can put on the field, because I do think that the team is built well enough that they can be a lot better than they were in 2018, of course. I think they're a much more complete team now than they were then. And then, of course, if they can get on the field and stay on the field for an extended period of time, I think they are much closer to the 2019 MLS Cup finalists, right? So I'd say right in the middle right now, probably closer to a better team than a poor team, just because I do like the way top to bottom, there's a lot of depth there. Aside from center forward, of course, which is Josy Altidore, and the fullback spots where there's a little bit of thinness on the depth chart, everywhere else it's quite a deep squad for MLS purposes. So they'll be good. They'll be probably top three in the East. Good. Are they good enough to repeat a cup finalist or even a cup championship? I think that all depends on the injury situation, as they can get all those guys healthy at the end of the year. But to start the year, you know, they'll be a good to very good MLS team. I don't think they'll be a shield contender right out of the gates, but they have the potential of being that as long as they can stay healthy.
If Seattle and Toronto are in the final again, I think they're going to cancel MLS. They're going to be like, no, it's done. No, done. We're done. This is going to be new next year. It's going to be, I don't know, let's call it the MASL. I don't know. Never mind. But no,
yeah,
it'll be interesting.
For sure.
No, exactly. It'll be canceled this thing next year if it happens again. But I just want to touch on one point that you mentioned. And I don't want to dwell on the injuries, and I don't want to dwell on all that thing that could go wrong. But I want to look at the circumstances regarding Michael Bradley's injury and how it not how it happened, but of course his rehabilitation process pre-surgery, who was supposed to replace a surgery, and eventually that progress didn't happen and a surgery was needed. The handling not only of the injury itself, the handling of the news of it, and the handling of that story, it got a lot of press when it came out. It died quickly. I think it's a big deal when your captain, your soul, a player that you spend a lot of money on a new contract. Of course, it's that money, so it doesn't necessarily affect your salary cap to a point where it impedes your possibilities going to the summer window. But what is your thought on the Michael Bradley injury and all the circumstances surrounding it? And also the fact that, well, if that would have been known, maybe things would have been a bit different in the offseason.
Yeah, look, I've heard kind of both sides of it. You know, they should have diagnosed it earlier. They should have dealt with it earlier. And then, of course, I've heard the other side where, you know, they were trying to deal with it, but it just never worked out. I'm going to have to side with Michael Bradley here. You know, he's the guy who has a lot of clout within this club. And if he felt that he needed to have surgery right away, then he would have convinced the club to have surgery right away. But I think he's the kind of player, and maybe to his own fault, that would have tried to work through that. And, you know, maybe the medical advice was bad. Maybe it wasn't. I'm not a doctor. A lot of people on Twitter suddenly got medical degrees when this news came out. It is what it is, right? It's pro sports. Sometimes these things happen. It's unfortunate that it happened to you know, one of the figureheads of the club. He's still going to be in and around the locker room, of course. He'll still be able to provide that leadership off the field, on the field. I don't know if there's going to be much of a talent drop between him and Liam Fraser, to be quite honest. So I do think that, you know, TFC will be able to survive without him. It's a tough one because, you know, we can all sit here and second guess and say, you know, they should have done this, they should have done that. But without intimate knowledge of exactly what happened, we really are making educated guesses here, and not even well-educated guesses, because I'm not a doctor exactly. But yeah, of course, you know, you can always say in hindsight it could have been dealt with better. But from what I did, you know, hear from people that are in the medical field, that it, you know, there are two schools of thought on that injury. Is that, you know, sometimes you just have to kind of let it play out and see if you can work your way through it, to see if it if it gets better. And if it doesn't, then you have to go to surgery, right? Or the second school of thought is you have surgery right away. You could possibly mess it up even more if you do that, because it hasn't healed enough for the surgery. So I think they were stuck of two minds there, and they went with the safer route, which ended up being the worst route in terms of losing him for so long. So, you know, I just mentioned how much depth they have and how well they are kind of prepared to take on this season, and specifically Liam Fraser. And in the midfield, they are, you know, that's their deepest squad. They've got tons of midfielders. I know none of them are Michael Bradley in terms of leadership and in terms of experience and just the, you know, the intangibles that he brings. But TFC, as time goes on, you know, this is a nearly 33-year-old player now. As time goes on, they're going to have to learn how to play less and less with him anyway. So maybe this is a bit of a dry run for them. So, to look for the positive in that situation, I think that's it right there. Is, you know, Liam Fraser gets a lot of playing time and maybe he wouldn't have if Michael Bradley was okay right now.
Yeah, just before Dwayne jumps in, I just want to mention, that's why I presented both scenario in the way I presented the situation, because I believe sometimes we forget people get injured, and it's just like real life. Sometimes you get injured, and you try one solution, and you think there's some progress, and there's some healing happening, but then there's setbacks, and it happens in real life. Every one of us had injuries or illnesses or diseases that it gets better, and then there's setbacks. It happens to professional athletes as well.
Exactly.
Fair enough. All right, Rudy, I want to continue kind of on the vein that you were there. There's two players I'm going to name to you, and you've already mentioned Liam Fraser quite a bit, but maybe you could tell our non-Canadian listeners, our non-Toronto listeners, a little bit more about that player. The other player I wanted to talk about that I get asked about all the time, and unfortunately I don't have the budget to follow them around preseason, so I can't really answer this. I'm not too sure how you can either. Gallardo. What's happening with him, and how key are those two players, do you think, to their success in 2020?
Sorry, who was the second one?
Erickson Gallardo.
Oh, Gallardo. Yeah, okay. I'll continue with the Liam Fraser thing for a minute, because, you know, I have already talked about him. But, you know, he's not like-for-like with Michael Bradley. For anybody who's not familiar with him, he's kind of in the same mold. You know, of course, he plays in the same spot in the field. You know, they could possibly play next to each other in a similar way that Fraser and Samuel Piette did in, you know, against the U.S. in that, you know, famous victory back in October. He's got similar passing range to Bradley in that, you know, they both like to hit a long ball diagonal to Jozy Altidore or whoever is running onto it. I do think that Bradley's a better short passer, and he's better at driving with the ball at his feet. And he's a bit more goal dangerous than Liam Fraser is. But Fraser right now, of course, is more athletic just because he's a lot younger. He doesn't have the miles in his legs. I think he may even be a little bit better defensively, which is strange to say because Michael Bradley made his name for himself being a defensive midfielder. But I think as a one-on-one defender, I think Fraser's got a similar kind of bite to Michael Bradley, but he might have a little bit better one-on-one defending skills. Whereas I think Bradley's obviously a little more aware tactically and positionally on the field, but that comes with experience, right? As for Erickson Gallardo, he's a wide player. This preseason he's been kind of on and off the field with injuries, but apparently he's better now. He has a little bit of a groin strain. I think he's not a guaranteed start on this team. As long as Pablo Piatti is out, I think that Gallardo's he's going to be starting because he's kind of a like for like, not like for like directly. It's kind of the Fraser Bradley situation where they're similar players, but I think Gallardo's got a little bit more speed. He's a little bit more direct as a winger, whereas Piatti is he likes to play a little bit more interchanging. He can also cut more into the center of the field. From what I've heard, and it's been very hard for anyone to follow TSC's preseason this year, is that Gallardo's had a pretty decent preseason, aside from the little injury spell that he had, and that he's ready to go. And, he's adjusted now. It took him quite a while because he's been with the team for, the half of the season before this. He barely got any playing time, but he was also struggling with injuries to start, which is a little bit worrisome. But again, this is TFC we're talking about. Everyone's struggling with injuries, apparently.
Is there something in the water? Sorry.
No, well, I mean, you get players that are injury prone to begin with, and that's what happens, right? But this is a 23, 24-year-old, so, you think that he would be able to kind of shake it off a little bit better. But regardless, it doesn't matter. I do feel that he has had the time to adjust now, and from what I've heard, he's settled in. The preseason has done him very well. He wasn't thrown into the fire like he was when he came in the midsummer window last year. So he's a guy that they're banking on a lot. He's a TAM player, so he's not going to be the upper echelon of what TSC wants. But he's a guy that you want to provide the secondary option behind an Alapan, a Pozuelo, and an Altidore and a Piatti. So he's a guy that's going to be relying on a lot to generate a lot of the attack down that that right hand side.
Speaking of injuries, let's talk briefly about Josie. Do you have confidence that he can play those 2,000 minutes that I think are the magic number for them? And if he can't, where does the scoring come from? Do they put Pozuelo further up the pitch? The Achara guy who appears to have had a good preseason, does he take over in a like-for-like? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, with Josie, you're never going to get, I don't know. I don't know about 2,000 minutes, but let's just talk about, you're never going to get 30 games out of Josie. You get 20 regular season games out of him, you're good. I think that's, that's kind of the over-under they've set on him. Excuse me. He is what he is. He's extremely dominant when he's on the field, but he struggles to stay on the field. I think they've kind of altered his program a little bit more this year. They've kind of, even over last year, they've been trying to get him on different fitness schedule and that kind of thing. And, he looked leaner and meaner last year. I think that helped when he dropped 10 to 15 pounds of extra muscle there. So he wasn't as muscular, but he was a little bit fitter in terms of being able to run around for 90 minutes. I'm not sure exactly how this offseason has gone for him in terms of that kind of schedule. We know that he missed the last game, which was barely a game, and it was like 20 minutes because of the on and off rain. But he did miss the last game of the preseason due to a little bit of hip issue, but that was more precautionary. He's already back in training. He's already been named the captain in Michael Bradley's absence. Greg Vanney said Josie Altidore is wearing the captain's armband on Saturday, which is pretty definitive. As long as nothing happens between now and Saturday, then he'll be on the field. If he can give TFC 2,000 minutes, they'll be extremely happy because he's a top three goal scorer in goals per 90, I believe. If not top three, top five when he's on the field. So this is a guy who can absolutely dominate at the MLS level. It's all about his health, and it's always been about his health. And I think that if anything, this year will be, they'll kind of load manage him similar to Piatti, so that they'll have him better prepared in the second half of the season, because as much as the regular season counts and they want to win everything, it's all about what they do in the playoffs and getting back to that MLS Cup final. And having a healthy Josie Altidore is key. I wouldn't say it's the make or break, because they did very well with him in the playoffs last year without him to get the MLS Cup and having Pozuelo up front. But You know, he is a key player, and what they do without him, you know, they got Achara, who has done well in the preseason. Of course, they like Mullins, but you know, he's not, neither of those guys is Altidore. You know, Pozuelo did well as a false nine, but that's not his position either. So it'll be like goals by committee with Altidore out, and you know, I think they're prepared for that because they've had to do that every single season he's been with the team.
We'll continue our travels eastward. We're going to stop in Montreal. We'll go from one Piatti to another Piatti. That Piatti is gone now. But we already have seen Montreal be successful without Nacho Piatti. Kind of last year, we're really successful in 2019, but Piatti was injured. But already in 2020, the Montreal Impact are moving on to the quarterfinals of the CONCACAF Champions League. Of course, mm-hmm. Dwayne and I will talk about it later on. But we're seeing already the post-Piatti era with the Montreal Impact. How much of that will influence the results of Montreal in 2020? And is there such a thing as maybe a sunshine after the rain?
Well, I like the way that Thierry Henry has got them structured already. He's got them playing disciplined soccer. We saw that against Saprissa, and especially in the second leg, where Saprissa had, at one point, it was 76% possession. I don't know if it ended that way, but
yeah,
it was in
close.
The second half.
It was close. Yeah. I stopped counting because I was dizzy just watching the ball between white players, between players with white shirts. So I was dizzy.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair to the Impact, that was their second game of the, you know, a competitive game of the season with a new coach, a whole bunch of new players, versus a team that, you know, was in their 12th competitive game of 2020. So, and a very good Saprissa side with a lot of familiar names, of course. You got to do what you got to do. And it's funny because if you look at Thierry Henry as a player, and, you know, he was the guy capable of just being sublime and playing on some of the best teams ever, you know, the Invincibles and the early Pep Guardiola Barcelona squads and those teams there. So you kind of expect that from him as a coach, but I think he knows, he's smart enough to know that you can't have it from this Montreal Impact side right now. They just don't have the horses for that. They just don't have the talent to play that kind of, even in within MLS right now. You know, maybe they will in a year or two, but right now, you know, especially losing their most creative player and their most impactful player in Ignacio Piatti over the past 5 years, you know, you just don't take someone off the squad like that without replacing him and expect to play the same kind of soccer. So, you know, they played compact, they played hard to beat, they were hard to break down. It was very encouraging in that sense, in that, you know, they won't be blown out very often, I don't think. Again, this is a small sample size, but, you know, that's all we got. That's all we have to work on right now. But I did like the way they were set up. So that, to me, is the ray of sunshine in the kind of gloomy outlook for the Impact right now. That being said, to go on the more gloomy side, I don't know where the goals are going to come from. You know, you don't have that moment of magic that you can rely on with Piatti. Unfortunately, I don't think Bojan is up to that right now. Maybe he gets to that spot again for all the talent that he has and all the pedigree he has and you know, where he came from. Of course, he was a teammate of Thierry Henry's in his first two or three seasons at Barcelona. So that's, you know, that's where he's coming from. But from what I've seen from Bojan, you know, he's not going to... To me, he doesn't look like he's up to taking on that mantle right now. Maybe he just doesn't. Maybe it's not fitting into the style of play, whatever. I don't know what it is. But so to me, the biggest concern is creating goals offensively, and I think that's something that Henry knows. He knows that this team is not going to outscore most MLS sides. Of course, there's going to be outlier games. You know, you just randomly win 4-0 for some reason, But for the most part, this is going to be a team that's in the lower half of the scoring charts in MLS, and it's going to be a team that grinds out games, similar to Vancouver, except Vancouver has, to me, a better goal scorer in Lucas Cavallini that can kind of do something on his own as long as he gets the ball within the box. I don't think that the Impact had that. I know that, of course, you know, Okwunkwo and a couple other players have that in flashes. I just don't see that consistency yet, and maybe that's the next step for the Impact. So there's a lot. I think there's a lot to be hopeful about in terms of, you know, formations and tactics. In terms of, at least they'll be competitive this year. They won't be blown out, but I just don't see where they'll be able to. I don't know where the goals are going to come from. Maybe Romo Kyoto will help in that regard. But you know, I did like. Another one I liked is Louis Binks in the back line, you know, a young, big, strong center back and Joel Waterman as well, coming from Cavalry. Those two guys, I wouldn't say they're pleasant surprises because I'm not too surprised by it, But it's another thing that they can build on, because they're already suffering from the injury bug already this year, and
another one last night.
They showed that they have a little bit of depth.
You mentioned injuries. Jukka Raitala last night was substituted at halftime with injury. Also, another defender. You mentioned Louis Banks, and I was going there. That was my question for you, because not only is he a defender, Montreal were desperately needed defenders, but his pedigree, of course, he comes from Tottenham Academy, and he wanted to play. He wanted to play, and he thought he was ready. And seeing him last night, I guess he is ready. He might be the best defender the Montreal Impact has right now after one game, and quite a nice gentleman also. But my question to you is, value in Major League Soccer in 2020 is going to be necessary when you have a limited amount of money you can spend, especially if you're Montreal and you don't want to necessarily overspend what you don't have outside of your salary cap and not on DPs and stuff like this. So finding values in player like a Louis Banks, which they didn't spend that much money for him, but the fact that he's here now and he might be here for a while and he might be the best defender this team have seen in a long time. What do you think, first of all, of this type of transaction, of getting a young player from an academy of a top club in Europe that doesn't have a chance to play, give him a chance to play, almost no risk, a lot of upside, and what did you think of him last night?
Yeah, like I said, he's a big, lanky kid. He'll fill out, of course. He's only 18 years old, but he plays like he's in his mid-20s, and he's very calm on the ball, very composed. He looks very, when he has the ball at his feet, he doesn't panic. He looks like a veteran, a savvy veteran back there. And I think that's exactly what this Impact team needs, because like I said, I think they're going to be defending a lot more than they are going to be attacking. It's a little bit of the Thierry Henry effect too, because I think that a player like Louis Banks is looking for playing time. Maybe looking at MLS, but maybe not looking at the Impact, but then all of a sudden Thierry Henry's there. It's like, oh, I get to play under this guy. I know, first of all, he knows who he is. And secondly, he's a legend. And I think to me that's an underrated kind of pull that Thierry Henry has. And there's a few coaches like that in MLS. There have been a few coaches like that, but in a similar mold to those value kind of high pedigree, low value, but high potential players, especially on the back line, is a player we're all familiar with, is Zachary Broguillard, another player who came from a very good academy system at Lyon, and has shown that he can kind of step in and play that right side and be a difference maker. And with his speed and his decision making, I think he's going to grow into a player. We're going to see him grow in leaps and bounds this year. And now that he's getting that playing time, because he wasn't really guaranteed it last year, this year he's kind of the man on that side. So he's the guy that's going to be depended on to start attacking the right side, but he's also going to be able to grow in that side and make mistakes and learn from them. So I think those two guys definitely are the kind of buys that I think that the Impact are going to be thriving on, not just this year, but in the future.
Over the last couple of days this week in MLS Preview Week, we've asked Jeff Reuter who's going to be his best team in the West. It was Seattle. We've asked Paul Tenorio a couple of days ago who was going to be the best team in the East, and he says NYCFC. My question to you, Rudy, who's going to be the best team in Canada?
Best team in Canada is going to be TFC again. They're top to bottom. They're more settled. It's a very consistent roster from what it was last year. Very few changes. Only one really key signing, that was Pablo Piatti, and then the other three signings were academy and draft picks, really. So young guys that are going to be at the end of the bench, mostly play for TFC too. And this is a team that made it all the way to MLS Cup final last year, and lost very few players, and the core is still there. Of course, like I said, the injury doubts are what they are, and I think the fullback depth is the only really spot where they're really hurting, other than, of course, behind Jozy Altidore, because he will be out. We can all bank on Jozy Altidore missing time. But to me, they are the best constructed team right now, and they were the best team in Canada last year, and there's no reason to say that they're not going to be the best team in Canada this year, because of continuity.
Rudy Schuler of The Sporting News, thank you for joining us today. We hope you have a great MLS season in front of you, and we hope that you're ready for MLS this Saturday. Have a great day, Rudy.
Thanks. I am definitely ready.
And we'll be right back after this short break to talk about, I don't know, maybe a game that happened last night.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at @SoccerTodaySPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. If you want to have more details on Montreal's win in the quarter, in the round of 16 of the CONCACAF Champions League, getting a ticket to the quarterfinals off the Woodworks post-game show, CONCACAF Champions League edition is out on YouTube and Facebook, a video show live from the Olympic Stadium last night. I have the press conference of Thierry Henry, talk with Louis Binks, amazing gentleman. He was really nice, and I got a chance to talk to him late last night. Same for Sam Piet and Amar Sejdic, available on our YouTube page and our Patreon page. We'll have a special interview later on today on the Two Side Two Soccer podcast with Matthew Arnone of York 9 Football Club, new center back for the Vaughan Region team in his home region back home to play his second season in the Canadian Premier League. And you'll find that and more on our Patreon page, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Now, Dwayne, I know it's MLS preview week, but we kind of have to talk CCL a little bit. Yes, we'll get to Montreal, but did you see that Tigres goal? 10 seconds left in the freaking extra time. Okay, here's what happened. I'm in the press box. Montreal's game just finished. I put my computer to the Tigres game. Everyone leaves, take the elevator, go down. I'm like, why is everyone rushing? You're going to wait 20 minutes for Walter Centeno down there. You should maybe stick around and watch the end of this game. Tigres is about to get eliminated. Oh, look, the keeper's crossing the field. The keeper's going in the box. The keeper scores on the corner with 10 seconds left in extra time to qualify Tigres to the quarterfinals. They were this close of being eliminated. And the goalie scores just like in a movie. That was fun to see.
Well, unless you're, you know, hating on the Ligue 1 Axi teams. But the Club America takes it to shootout as well. So the not a standout performance by the Mexican teams here. And I think that might be a case of, you know, I think you see this across the board, and you can see this a little bit in Europe as well, where the smaller nations have figured tactically out how to play a larger nation now and are able to be more competitive. But ultimately, the talent has won out in every series so far in the CCL. We've yet to see an upset. Depends on your perspective of Saprissa v. Montreal. I thought Montreal was the favorite. So, yeah.
Only if you look at it with a subjective opinion of actual Montreal players by overanalyzing them. I think that's something we have to be careful for, because all of us that are in an individual market and we look at one team a lot compared to the other teams in the league or continent or the region, you overanalyze and you have an overanalysis bias, I guess, where you think some players might be worse than there actually is because you always see them you always pinpoint their flaws because you see them all the time. So I think there's something to that, but I think you're right. Montreal was the favorite in this series, and they were the favorite, and they're going to the quarterfinals. Now, will it be Seattle? Will it be Olympia? We'll know that tonight. Louis Binks, have to say, one thing I need to mention that Rudy mentioned, it helps to have Thierry Henry as a manager to bring Louis Binks over. It also helps to have the same agent, but that's all I'm saying. They do have the same agent, so it does facilitate also the communication and transfer papers and everything when there's a relationship there. So conspiracy theorists will see one thing, but I think it's Hackam Razors here, and just it's easier to be done, and there's already a prior relationship, so things can happen, and there's a connection between points where an agent that has two clients that have a similar third party, like a club, as a link, well, it does facilitate movement. But last night, Louis Binks impressed me, Dwayne. He's maybe the best young defender I've seen in a long time. So good in the air. He was able to control the back line. I was looking at him intensively around the 20th to 25 minutes, like solely on him. And he was like talking to his teammates. He already found his marks. What I thought was really surprising to me is I was looking at a Yuka Raitala example, and I don't want to single him out. It's nothing to say, but just to show you something different. He was always looking where his teammates were. and always finding points of points on the stadium to know where he is, but he was always looking where he was compared to his goalie, compared to the post, compared to his teammates for holding the line. Louis Binks doesn't have to. He knows where he is. And it might seem silly, but that fraction of a second of hesitation is more of thinking what you're going to do next. And what you see is a maturity for an 18-year-old that is equivalent to a 25-year-old. And that was blatant for me last night.
Yeah, well, when you're coming from that type of environment that he came from, your tactics, your technical abilities are going to be first rate. Now, the concern I would have with him over the course of a 34-game Major League Soccer season will be, you know, he's a young player. Has he gone through the rigors of that yet? Any player coming from someplace that's not as big as Major League Soccer physically will also struggle a little bit with that. And, you know, you mentioned him as a lanky player. That's maybe means he's going to grow out a little bit more, fill out a little bit more, and perhaps when he's up against a physically strong forwards, unlike Central Americans, you might struggle a bit there, but certainly a lot of promise for sure. And he's going to get a shot with the Impact. And I think that's, you can't underestimate that. And you can't underestimate how important that is for a young player. And, you know, mentioned mutual agents, that's fine. And that's just the reality of Major League Soccer. Like,
well, the reality of the world of soccer right now, there's only so many agencies around, and the big agencies, well, they have big pool because they have phone numbers and emails that maybe others don't.
Sure. And look, I want you to play under a guy like this. He can teach you something. I mean, you did play a different role, but he can teach you how to be a professional anyway. Right. So it's certainly going to benefit a lot of people. And as I said, he'll get an opportunity. Like, I thought the Impact playing the way that they did last night is going to be an indication. And we talked about this yesterday of what you're going to see out of them this year, that they are going to try to counter. They are going to try to defend solidly. And as I said yesterday, they're probably not going to win championship doing that, but they probably don't need to be set up to do that quite yet. They can build. They have two DB spots to play with. If they are doing better than they think come July, they can pull the trigger on one. Maybe it doesn't even have to be a big one. They can pull the trigger to find someone in Bologna that they can maybe plug in there at a little bit higher of a number. Something like that. And that's a good position to be in. And I do believe that if you get inside their brains, that they think 21, 22 is more where they're looking to peak and compete truly. And this is truly a building year. Henri needs to grow as a manager. This realistically is his first full season, right? It's the first time he started started in the preseason with the team and going to see it through. I believe Joey's not going to be Joey in this particular case because he got his man. And there's going to be a certain amount of shelf life with that you have this big name that you can then use and use as a marketing push and use as a lot of things and have him grow. And there's going to be a certain amount of forgiveness because it is the legend Henri that is there.
There's a shield. There's a shield of deflection, right? And he's going to protect his player. And I think that's one aspect of having a manager that has a personality. Not that he has it. No, it's not true. Because his personality is not larger than life. So at least not what I've seen so far. But he has a larger-than-life celebrity status, fame status, and legendary status that people, just freaking example, like players, people come from media outlets from the Costa Rica, Colombia, and they like, it's like they bow down in front of him. It's like they almost ask for an autograph, and can you sign my Arsenal jersey? And then what do you think about the game tomorrow? Like, we've seen these type of reaction. Having a manager like this is able to deflect the criticism, and he's able to take a lot, too. He can put it on him. Whenever a situation doesn't go the way Montreal Impact can, he can deflect that criticism and find a way to deflect it on him, a la Jose Mourinho. And then you have a situation where the players feel protected and feel they have an environment to bloom inside of. And you kind of need that environment sometimes when you have young players developing. So it will be a fascinating time. And of course, it will never be boring with the Montreal Impact. But the journey to the CONCACAF Champions League continues with now a journey to the quarterfinals. Will it be Seattle? Will it be Olympia? We will know later tonight, Dwayne. Yes, we will know later tonight, Dwayne. On that note, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, and this show at Soccer Today SPN. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the World of Football with a Soccer Perspective at 11 a.m. with day 5 of the MLS Preview Week. But maybe surprise things are going to happen. Maybe don't. Follow us at Soccer Today SPN to make sure you don't miss any action for the rest of the week. Until next time, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.